The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
What exactly needs to happen for a team to be in dreamland? The classiest photo ever taken in the history of association football? Some surprise commentary from the top table of European hockey? Some abysmal football approximation from the world of crime thriller literature? Is 72 years too long to be a spell? An absolutely textbook did you mean it post-match interview? Quest's EFL highlights go snookaloopy and the most Richard Keys tweet ever constructed. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 154 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry. Alongside me for this one once again is Charlie Eccleshare. Hi Charlie.
Hi Adam, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. Trying to find the definitive phrase for this. What did Brighton do to Tottenham's top four hopes this weekend?
Dent.
Did they dent them? A mere dent?
Yeah, I don't think it was like a derailed right. Or I think Spurs' top four hopes suffered a dent. Okay. Suffered a setback.
I think that's good.
Yeah, measured. So they're not hanging by a thread. Or anything like that.
They're still in fourth, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think Southampton potentially derailed Arsenal's top four hopes on Saturday.
Yeah, love a good derailing. That voice you can hear is David Walker. Dave, tell us about your Uber driver on Thursday night, please.
So my mate was ordering an Uber for us on Thursday night and he turned to me and he went, "Mate, the Uber driver is Kevin Keegan." And I was like, "What? What are you on about, Kevin Keegan?" And he showed me the phone and his name was Kevin Keegan. But unfortunately, the surname was spelled K-E-I-G-A-N.
Doesn't matter. And given the state of Uber these days, you know, how often they cancel on you and you have to wait for another one to pop up. Oh, the tension that was there in case he didn't arrive. All the jokes that could potentially...
Yeah, I was thinking, yeah, I would love it, etc. Did you ask him about being called Kevin Keegan once you were in?
No, he wasn't particularly talkative, I'm afraid.
Right.
Wasn't much as much of a character as King Kev.
Not living up to the name.
As much of a meat lover. Maybe he is. I guess we just don't know.
Yeah, keeping the taxi industry going single-handedly, Kevin Keegan. Brilliant stuff. Right, let's do the adjudication panel this week. Let's start all the way back on Thursday night. This is Robbie Savage co-commentating on BT Sports coverage of PSV versus Leicester in the Europa Conference League quarter-final second leg. 64 minutes in, Leicester need a goal and they need all the help they can get.
Daka goes again. Angle got too tight. Held it up well, however. Dewsbury Hall. Shoot! Did shoot and score against Palace at the weekend.
Charlie, going to pin my colours to the mast right here. Don't like co-commentators urging players to shoot in the style of a fan.
Well, yeah, and hot on the heels of Graham Potter talking about it not being helpful from fans.
Big time.
Was that a thinly veiled dig at Potter? Yeah, I agree. It's when fans, you know, it's kind of fan zone, isn't it? We don't want that from our commentators.
It's unconventional. I suppose Savage is there's one person that kind of makes sense for him to be like that and do sort of something a bit wacky. It's Savage, but it reminds me of the thing, Adam, that you've said many times on this podcast when people, guests in particular, who you've had on, like, will recount a footballing song or a chant from the crowd but not do it properly.
Yes.
He didn't do it properly, did he?
Mm.
He needed to give the proper shoot.
If you're not going to commit, don't do it. The mantra for most things in life. Let's stick with a European theme. Dave, this is from listener Alex Skinner, who noted the BBC Live blog's headline during West Ham's glorious win at Lyon in the second leg. The headline read as follows. European quarterfinal, Lyon 0, West Ham 3, Hammers in Dreamland. So this was mid-game Jared Bowen had put them 3-0 up after 48 minutes. Alex Skinner simply asks, at what point does it become Dreamland? It's a very specific thing, I think, Dreamland, because it's not something, despite the name, that happens pre-game. You can't be in Dreamland, despite the fact you may be dreaming. It doesn't happen after the game, even though your dreams may have been realised. So what is Dreamland?
You know what? I think this is pretty good. A pretty good sort of bar for it is being 3-0 up in a European quarterfinal, or just being like being unexpectedly far in the lead in a game of significance. Mm. Games that come to mind when I'm thinking of Dreamland is England-Germany 5-1.
Yeah.
Even before we got to 5.
At what point, what point did it become Dreamland?
When,
3?
When
4-1,
when,
I think.
When Motti did the this is getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
I think it's like the goal that takes it from being, oh, got a good solid lead here, looking good, to being, oh my God, they've got another one.
We're definitely winning here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think time is important. I think it happening reasonably early.
Yes.
That's a proper dream, that, because then it is like, I just can't believe this is, you know, we're only half an hour or 40 odd minutes in and we're already like, this is just, that feels very dreamy to me.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be super early. You don't sort of race into a 3-0 lead, but if you get it before the hour mark, and I'm going to say, I say 3-0 is Dreamland territory, given all the other factors into consideration. You don't want it to be too early, because then it becomes, you know, absurd. But any later than that, into the kind of final throes of the game, you don't get that kind of basking in the glory of it, passing around going, what is happening here? I don't get it. And it's also, that's cake icing territory, isn't it? And that's a very separate thing. But I think we're right. Dave's nailed the vibe here completely. It has to be, Charlie, a team who wouldn't have thought they could be in this situation. Hence indeed, Dreamland.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. I mean, yeah, City being 3-0 up at home against Watford, that is not Dreamland.
I can imagine.
That's very much reality. But it's in the...
I'd love to know the tipping point for this. I'd really love to know.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, it's beyond their wildest expectations. I think that's Dreamland.
Could, therefore, any Big Six club be in Dreamland in any situation?
I think if City were 3-0 up in a Champions League final early,
yes,
not having won it before.
Is it Dreamland? Is
I think
it
would be.
It lacks the innocence that Dreamland needs.
I mean, I think the level of the opposition might come into it. Like, if they were 3-0 up against Real Madrid or Bayern Munich or even Liverpool, really. Yeah. I mean, were Liverpool in Dreamland when they were 3-0 up against City at half-time at the weekend? Probably not, though.
Well,
maybe. It was close, but not quite.
I don't think they're enough of an underdog there.
Yeah. Ideal land.
Yeah. We just executed really well, land.
It's a very precise thing. I put it to our listeners that the Big Six clubs could never be in Dreamland, although it's touch and go. Next up, speaking of West Ham's excellent performance over in France, here's Declan Rice speaking after the game. I think he may be the first footballer I've ever heard to cite this very specific phenomenon.
You know, there was a few incentives tonight for us to go out there and win. Obviously, Dembele winking in the first leg at the camera, and then their Twitter admin somehow saying that they don't see how they're not going to get through. So, you know, them things come back to bite you. And, you know, we stayed quiet, put in a performance, and now West Ham in the semis. What more do we want?
Dave, we're very familiar with the kind of, we saw what they were like after the first leg kind of sentiment after a team storms back. But I've never heard a player cite a Twitter admin before.
Brilliant.
Really good. Really
brought the admin. He's brought the admin. Yeah. This is true. This really is like
worlds
a
collided.
True sort of, what is Declan Rice? Is he Generation
Gen Z?
I think. Yeah, maybe, yeah. He's possibly too young to be a millennial. But like, yeah, this is, you know, pinning the newspaper up on the dressing room wall, the modern version of that.
Charlie, it's bulletproof post-match sentiment. I love this sort of stuff. I mean, he didn't revel in it too much. He kept his calm about it, and it was very kind of businessman-like, and I really enjoyed how he nailed that.
Yeah, I'm curious to know exactly what the Twitter admin said, because the way he described it sounded more a bit like don't know how tub thumping it was. It'd be quite unlike a club admin. Maybe that's what.
Maybe
so
it was
got
the Leon_EN account, which is the lawless. They don't count. Can't have a go at them. That's just some office somewhere.
Winking as well is Good one, yeah. Winking into the camera.
Yeah, good stuff from Declan Rice. His stock rising even further with that. That wasn't the end of the scenes in Lyon, though, Dave, because somewhere deep in the bowels of their stadium, the classiest ever photo in football history was taken. Mark Noble, dressed only in a towel, sweeping up the mess of the West Ham squad in the changing room floor. It doesn't get classier than that, Dave. It has all the ingredients. Magnanimity.
Humility.
Yeah.
It's the perfect person to be doing this as well, isn't it? Just
Mr. West Ham.
Mr. West Ham. Yeah. Like proper old school professional, old enough to remember doing the old, you know, this is what we used to have to do every day at training
for the apprentice.
When I was on a YTS scheme.
Mm. If it had been Fabianski doing it, no one would have really cared for us.
Yeah, but you've got, in the shot, and it's Ben Johnson in the background, sort of like looking at the camera, kind of laughing, sort of like, what's he doing, sort of thing.
I mean, this whole thing, pure class, is it, a lot of it stems from the same way that if you meet a famous person, your threshold is so low that if you meet a famous person, they say like, oh, hi, how are you? You're like, nicest bloke in the world. Yeah. I met him, he's the nicest, he's so down to earth. It's like, all he has to do is say, hi, how are you? And that's probably enough. Same way. I mean, this, to be fair, is a lovely gesture. But
really made me feel like I was the only person in the room.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they really have to do very little. Like, if I was a footballer, the power that you have to be known as the nicest bloke in the world, the classiest man in the world, doesn't take much.
I mean, my personal anti-classy touch crusade has moved on from its first phase, Dave, which was, oh, even the simplest act of humanity now is presented as a classy touch. I'm over that now. I get why this happens. But the way it's now been commodified as content does my head in. It's so stupid. It is stupid. I don't mind saying it. Fucking ridiculously juvenile and stupid. How can you be so easily impressed by this shit? I don't get it. It's so annoying. It's the way it's presented with the emojis and stuff. It's like, oh, it's mindless. It's mindless,
yeah.
Dave.
I can't disagree. And my other question about the whole scene. Why wouldn't you get dressed first before doing this? Why is he wearing a towel?
I think it's classier to do it because it implies that it was the first thing he could think of before getting dressed and getting back on the bus and getting all his stuff together. He thought, I'm going to do this.
It might be quite sweaty work. And so, you know, best done before you've put your club suit on and all of that sort of thing.
I can imagine being a very earnest sweeper, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Do it right.
If a job's worth doing.
For any youngsters watching.
Setting a good example.
Absolutely. I used to sweep the streets of the East End when I was a boy.
Yep, good. Yeah, well done, Mark Noble. The classiest thing ever attempted and achieved in football history. Max Baldock has brought us a very innocuous case of what a player they are, by the way. This is from Jonathan Pearce during the Women's FA Cup semi-final between Chelsea and Arsenal on Sunday.
Cheap. Here's Wrighton. Pearce out wide. Arsenal stretched. Ethelington's in the middle. Cuthbert's joining in. What a good player she is, by the way. Erin Cuthbert, here's G.
Say, Charlie, again, it is the most innocuous case I've ever heard. There's no call for it. There's no need.
Yeah, you can't do that of a current player.
She wasn't even on the ball.
Yeah, extraordinary. All bets are off with that one.
Yeah. I mean, it was early on. It was sort of early-ish into the game. It was the seventh minute that he's talking about there. So is that the first time he'd mentioned her in the game?
Just feels unwarranted.
Yeah.
The spotlight wasn't on Cuthbert at that stage, really. There wasn't a close-up of her sitting in the stands.
No, because it's such a filler, time filly thing to say, isn't it? It's like, yeah, you know.
You barely even fit it in.
Yeah, and the ball was being popped around the edge of the box there. There's stuff going on. Like, that's what you say when the director's cut to the stands, when there's a throw-in, whatever. We know the drill. Mm. Yeah.
Was it just a kind of such an unsung hero that he felt it had to be said?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't think she's unsung, though, is she?
Sounds to me like the agent got in touch.
Best players.
Could you squeeze in a, by the way, for us? Early doors. just get it in there. Nobody will notice. We did notice. Max Baldock
got a, she, maybe she's got a by the way bonus in her contract.
I mean,
up until now, I thought it was something you really did have to achieve. Wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's Hall of Fame territory, but no, can't just throw them out cheaply like that. You have to earn it, you know, or at least be being spoken about anyway. This came from Lee Pettifer, who has brought my attention to the Euro Hockey League semi-final. Surbiton are 5-1 down against German giants Rot-Weiss Köln. And here's a lovely bit of commentary, which starts with what I assume is traditional hockey commentary banter and ends with a new craze that's sweeping world sport.
His surname looks a little bit like my internet password at home.
A tackle from Graham Bush, but Surbiton still have it.
Shot! Oh my goodness! I could see that disappearing up where the owls initially.
Yes, indeed.
What? We can't have sleeping owls in hockey. There can't be too many top corner efforts in hockey, Charlie.
Incredible! I can't believe it's. What do you think? I can't believe it's spread.
Do they listen? Maybe they do. Big Tim Vickery
hockey,
fans.
Hockey cliches. Yeah. I don't. I imagine there probably are quite a few top. I mean that. That effort there wasn't
miles away.
It wasn't a million miles away.
I think it would be too mad for him to do the full Conor McNamara go. So I was listening to a podcast with Vickery the other day. Yeah. I'm not quite sure the hockey audience would necessarily be familiar with Tim's work. But
the knowing chuckles between them suggested it was a thing that they'd discussed previously and whether it could be applied to hockey. Well, it can. I think it just about works.
It's a goal, isn't it? Yeah. Same thing, basically.
Yeah. Has an angle. Owls may sleep there. But yeah, I hope everyone did enjoy that because I had to pay £10 to sign up to Euro Hockey TV just to get that 20-second clip. 50p a second.
How long is your subscription for?
Yeah, please remember to cancel that.
No, I think it's like a one-off. It better be. 50p a second. It's like I'm ringing up to find out the latest hockey transfer rumours in 1994. But still, anybody wants to watch some live hockey all round mine? Well, it's finished now. Surbiton got the bronze medal. You'd be delighted to know. Well done, them. Next up, I was bombarded with this. This did the rounds at the weekend. I kind of glossed over it at the start, but then I dug a little deeper. The tweet was from Not DCFC Boss, who said he was in hysterics at this American author trying to write about a couple watching a game of football. Now, Charlie, on this podcast, we've talked about films getting football wrong so much, and this kind of futile effort to choreograph it all. But we've never considered how literature might approach the beautiful game. The following passage is from a 2004 novel by Sidney Sheldon, the last he ever wrote before he died, in fact, called Are You Afraid of the Dark? It's about four mysterious deaths across the world. And in one of these scenarios, a man takes what appears to be his girlfriend, to a football game. And here's how it goes. The Paris Saint-Germain stadium was packed to capacity, with 67,000 eager fans waiting for the championship game between Lyon and Marseille to begin. Red flag number one.
What?
Yep. As Kelly and Mark were ushered to their seats directly above midfield, Kelly said, I'm impressed. These seats are hard to get, Mark smiled, and said, when you love soccer as much as I do, nothing is impossible. Kelly bit her lip to keep from laughing, not surprised. She could not wait for the game to begin. At 1400 hours, both teams entered the stadium, standing at attention while the band played La Marseillaise, the French national anthem. As the lineups for Lyon and Marseille faced the stands for introductions, a player for Lyon stepped forward, wearing the Lyon logo in the team colours of blue and white. Kelly decided to relent and let Mark know what was happening. She leaned toward him. That's their goalie, Kelly explained. I know, Mark said. Gregory Coupe. He's the best goalie in the league. He won a championship against Bordeaux last April. He won a UEFA Cup and a Champions League the year before that. He's 31 years old, 6 feet tall, and weighs 180 pounds. Kelly looked at Mark in astonishment. What is going on here? Charlie, can we just stop here and assess what the fuck is going on in this awful book?
So it's meant to be like their equivalent of the FA Cup final. If it's the championship match.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense, wouldn't it? Yeah,
that's what it has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah. What's he doing? He sounds like the biggest dick in the world. Why is he reading Wikipedia to his girlfriend?
He's got the attendance wrong as well for a start. The Parc des Princes is 47,929. Not 67,000.
Sidney Sheldon not doing his research, but it continues. The announcer continued, playing forward, Sidney Govou. Number 14, Mark enthused. He's incredible. Last week against Auxerre, he scored a goal in the last minute of the game. K Kelly listened in amazement as Mark knowledgeably discussed all the other players. The game began and the crowd went wild. It was a frenzied, exciting game, and goalies for both teams fought hard to keep their opponents from scoring. It was difficult for Kelly to concentrate. She kept looking at Mark, amazed by his expertise. How could I have been so wrong? In the middle of a play, Mark exclaimed, "Govu is going for a flick kick! He made it!" A few minutes later, Mark said, "Watch, Carriere is going to be fined for handling the ball." And he was right. Fined? For handling the ball, mid-game. Interesting. When Leon won, Mark was euphoric. What a great team! As they were leaving the stadium, Kelly asked, "Mark, how long have you been interested in soccer?" He looked at Kelly sheepishly and said, "About 3 days. I've been researching it on my computer. Since you're so interested, I thought I should learn much about it." Kelly was incredibly touched. It was unbelievable that Mark had spent so much time and effort just because she enjoyed the game. So Dave, we've established here that he was doing it all to impress her on the date. So noble, but also creepy, weird.
I mean, and that doesn't sound convincing to me. Kelly should have seen straight through him. But about flick kicks.
But is the author skewering people like Mark who try and affect knowledge of football? Is this actually a very clever...
Happy to consider this as a possibility, yes.
Kind of parody of people who do just parrot information they've read on Wikipedia and get it ever so slightly wrong.
Hope so. For the sake of the late Sydney Sheldon, I hope so.
If so, chapeau.
Nice that Sydney Govu gets a mention.
Yeah. He's very prominent, isn't he, with the flick kick.
Mark doesn't know about Gregory Coupe's famous double save against Barcelona at the Nou Camp. That's the first thing you mentioned about Gregory Coupe, surely. But at least he knows that he's 31 years old, 6 feet tall and weighs 180 pounds.
And did he say won simultaneously the Champions League and...
He won the UEFA Cup or something. And the Champions League before the year before that. In the same year.
Impressive.
Strange. Just a rare double. Stuff in now. Anyway, I hope he's among the four deaths in the book. That's all I can say, because he sounds like a twat.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Next up, a fascinating question. It's a very simple question, Dave, but it blew my mind. A little quiz for you, between you. Let's do this. Dave, sporting objects. Tiny little white sphere with dimples in it. What's that?
Golf ball.
Charlie, sort of medium, small-sized, furry yellow object. Or green. Greeny yellow, fluorescent.
Tennis ball?
Tennis ball, yes. Dave, shiny red object sphere with kind of stitching around it.
Cricket ball.
Charlie, finally, egg-shaped thing thrown sideways.
Rugby ball.
Indeed. Listener Greg asks, Dave, why isn't it called a football ball? It's a perfectly good question.
Yeah.
Why isn't it called a football ball? And even people who don't like football don't call it that.
Yeah.
I mean, Nobody would say it. Blow my mind.
You don't call tennis ball or golf ball.
I mean, there's an obvious way in, the fact that the ball is already encompassed in the name, but it's not.
Yeah, but what... Yeah. What were the origins of that? So why did the game initially get away with being called just football and other games just went by tennis and golf and cricket?
Don't have a ball.
And rugby. So rugby is rugby football, it's sort of technically,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is rugby football, yeah.
Rugby football ball. I mean, my mind is less blown the more we've discussed it, I have to say.
Is it to do with, like, although rugby sort of disputes that, but in those other sports, you have equipment and things like that. Whereas football...
It's the main deal.
There's nothing else you can use.
Yeah.
Is it foot in French?
Le foot, yeah.
Okay, so it does work in French.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like we could shoehorn this into the football language, Charlie, because a proper football man could potentially use this. They talk about winning football matches.
Mm.
He's a great football player.
He's a great striker of a football ball.
Yeah. He hits that football ball so lovely.
Or at the World Cup, like, look, this is just not a football ball that you want to... As a goalkeeper, that is not that is not an appropriate football ball.
The whole of the football ball over the whole of the football line. It's possible. I think we could do it, Dave.
I love
high
that.
Yeah. Football ball. I think it can happen.
On a brief tangent, you've just reminded me of something. I went to the there's a great exhibition on at the Design Museum in London at the moment, all about football ball. It has lots of football balls in the exhibition, including like the some couple of balls from the 1930 World Cup final, which are just amazing.
That moved around horribly.
Amazing things to look at. But the best thing for me at the whole exhibition, and there is everything you could possibly imagine to see, shirts, video clips, a big room where you go and watch the Zidane film in darkness and the big speakers.
Oh, fuck that.
It's all great. It's all great. But the best thing for me was a tiny little screen next to the Jabalani ball of the manufacturing process of how they made the Jabalani. Yeah. And it's incredible. Have you ever seen a football being made in a factory?
No.
It's astonishing. It's so many machines and bits and moving parts, and it was like a good sort of probably about 7 or 8 minutes I stood there watching it, and like I just can't get my head around how they even think about how to make this stuff. Like, who designs the Jabalani machine? Like it's incredible.
Did you then have a lot of sympathy for them given how maligned the Jabalani was?
A lot of work's gone into the old Jabalani. Yeah.
Dave, you sound like Greg Wallace in that programme where he goes to a factory and he can't believe that there's a machine that does that very tiny thing. Fair play.
Well,
someone has to make it, someone has to design it. It's a very good point. Manufacturing, a very, very granular thing. I quite agree. Next up, a question, Charlie, from Elizabeth Barnard. How many points out of 10 do we take off the magic of the FA Cup for the final two being the same as the League Cup? I don't agree. I think it's cool that it's the same two teams. It's only happened once before.
92-93, wasn't it? The Arsenal-Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah, I think that it would be better if they were kind of cup teams like those two teams were. I mean, they were kind of at the time mid-table sides, or they were that season. When it's sort of Chelsea and Liverpool and it's, what, two Champions League winners of the last three or something, maybe that takes a little bit of sheen off it. But that's not to do with it being the same as the other cup. I think that, that's quite a nice quirk in a way.
I like the symmetry of it, Dave. It doesn't offend me. I don't need that variety in my life whatsoever. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, exactly. I think if it was something that was happening all the time, then it would be a bit boring, a bit samey. But yeah, it is quite it's an interesting narrative.
We go again. Yeah. Mm. Double the chance, the second bite of the cherry at some pre-match poetry. I think it's going to happen this time. So, no points off Elizabeth Barnard. Next up, Connor Birch is well within his rights, Dave, to question this from Hull City fans on Friday. They're 2-0 up against Cardiff. 10 minutes to go. Cardiff have won a corner.
10 minutes to go. Cardiff City with another corner. Tommy Doyle will deliver into the six-yard box. Finds Aidan Flint. And Aidan Flint has scored for Cardiff and will make the last 10 minutes a very interesting affair.
We've said before, Dave, that if you move your shit and its variants away from its natural habitat of a goal kick, bad things are going to happen. And if you do it at a corner with your team only 2-0 up for 10 minutes to go, you're asking for trouble.
Absolutely. That is ridiculous.
It's like making a sub at a corner. You just know you just can't do it.
I think it's more active tempting of fate, to be honest, Charlie.
Definitely.
Let's hear it without commentary. Let's hear it in all its audio glory. Because it's a well-delivered one. No question about that.
Did you have to pay any money to sign up to the Hull City FC player there to
fortunately,
get that commentary?
Free to watch.
The expenses you're running out.
The final coincides with the header booming into the top of the roof of the net. It's wonderful.
Crazy thing to do, and especially off a really well struck corner. At no point does that corner look like you could. I know that you don't know this when you're doing that, but it could at least not look so stupid throughout if it was quite a bad corner and got cleared, and you were then like and then got delivered. That's just a good corner.
Have either of you ever seen that at a match that you've been in attendance at?
Not a corner.
No.
Not a chance.
No.
Me neither.
Not a corner.
I don't think it's a long enough run-up, to be honest.
No. But is it... Exactly. Is it an...
Slightly keezy from there. No! Why would you?
But is it a thing that is a tradition with Hull City?
Wouldn't
is it a northern thing?
Or lower down the leagues? Or is it possible that that player became, for whatever reason, the sort of pantomime villain of the piece?
Yeah. It's possible.
And therefore they wanted to target him.
Yeah.
Is it just... I just can't get my head around it. Is it the natural evolution of...
They're just starved of proper goal kicks. That's what it is.
Maybe that's it. Maybe because there's so few proper goal kicks, they're just taking any opportunity now.
A long throw would be
good. On the corner taker.
It could work quite well with a long throw because you're talking about a long run up, potentially a lower percentage chance of conceding a goal from it, Charlie. Long throws could be the new goal kicks for this. If we've got to keep the tradition going, which I think we do.
I still would be very, very wary of doing it myself. But yeah, I guess if you have to, if that is such a strong urge, saying your shit
and
something.
And of course, Dave, they were using the northern variant, you shit bastard R, which is a lot of syllables to fit into a corner as well, let alone the fact that someone's about to boom a header in at the end of it. It's a minefield. It really is.
And that extra syllable did make the difference between the chart ending on the header going in or ending just before.
And you've got to stick to it. You can't just cut it short. So, their fault, their problem, their cross to bear. Next up, interesting one to dig into for us, Charlie. Here's the headline from the BBC website. Scunthorpe United's 72-year spell in the English Football League will come to an end as a 3-0 loss at Leyton Orient confirmed their relegation from League Two. I put it to you, Charlie, and to everyone, that 72 years is too long for a spell. It's too long.
Yeah.
Yes. I think mainly, though, because spells are normally talked about a player at a club. Mm. I know you would get there. You might get like a 4-year spell in the Premier League or something.
Yeah, clubs could have a spell, no question. But what's the upper limit for a spell then? 10? At a push?
Yeah, but even 10's...
10-year spell.
No, because I think it gets into the territory of being a 10-year stay in the Premier League.
Mm. Stay's good. Stays fine.
Well, yeah, because I was going to say, is there a word you could use for 72 years?
I think stay is okay. It's not very glamorous, but
that's a long stay.
It's literally, it's a stay. 72 years stay.
Tenure?
Yeah, is it a tenure?
I'm concerned about tenure. I think it's a bit managery.
Managery, yeah. Tenure in the division sounds a bit weird.
It's not a reign, because they didn't do anything. So
it's not an era, is it?
No. I mean,
you can't describe an
era's been cheapened now. Eras could be anything. Eras can be 18 months under a manager, I think, if they were influential.
I think it's stay. It is stay. Mm. Yeah. They've just been there. They've just stayed around for 72 years. Mm. A spell is a sort of fleeting
spell of possession.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, loan spell.
Yeah. It's forgotten. He had a 6-month loan spell at Scunthorpe.
Loan spell is bang on. Absolutely right. That's the final nail in this coffin. Good to dig into. Good to confirm. Okay, next up, news that we could be seeing half-time interviews in the Premier League next season, Dave.
Mm, yeah, saw this.
Proposals have been sent to clubs and they're set to vote on this at the next AGM. It would be limited to 5 a season per manager. And if your team is losing, you will not be approached.
That's rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah. And the interviews will take place at the beginning or end of the halftime break, as is commonplace in the US, but yet to be seen here. The plans have been given a warm reception by media departments throughout the top flight. My instinct, Dave, was that this was a bit games gone-y. Then I thought, if I want to hear from a manager, halftime's not a terrible time to do it. Better than a pre-match interview, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, of course, it relies upon the willingness of managers to be open and the intrepidness of the question askers, you know.
It's a tricky one.
But I do feel like this is sort of being held up as some kind of new revolutionary thing. We have seen this before.
You have, yeah.
Yeah, there's been plenty of occasions, you know, I see many thinking like European matches, like in old Champions League matches.
Yeah, didn't Alex Ferguson do it? Yeah.
Like there's in the Graham Taylor Impossible Job documentary, he does one coming out at halftime in one of those away qualifiers. Like it's not unheard of for a broadcaster to just grab a quick 30 seconds or whatever with the manager as they're on the way out of the tunnel.
I think if you've got that relationship between Newbon and Ferguson, it was all right because Ferguson was never going to tell him to fuck off. But
it could be good, but it's just another one of those interviews that we already have two of, and it's going to be more of the same. It would be more interesting if you were to put the camera in a dressing room at halftime for 5 minutes.
Yes.
Mark Noble sweeping the floor. What a man he is.
It would also mean we might get to see managers in Dreamland.
Oh, yeah.
You said before how we never get to see that.
What is that, though? What would that look like?
We'll never admit to being in Dreamland, Charlie.
Big Sam lighting up a cigar at halftime.
Yeah. You're sort of just him bestriding, coming out at the Hawthorns or wherever he's
managing. Not team talk, lads. We're in Dreamland here.
He's just fully in dreamland. But yeah, I mean, that's it. It would just be a lot of hedging. There's a lot to come. You know, still a lot of football to be played.
I wouldn't even mind if they had the sound off. Just like CCTV footage of the dressing room.
Oh, in the dressing room? Body language. Things being hurled across the room. Yeah,
we know now that half-time on TV games is basically dead air. There's nothing to be gained from it. You're just waiting for the second half to start. But, Dave, we've talked about interviews pre-match and post-match on this podcast a lot. We know what they contain almost on a weekly basis. We know what they're going to get asked. We know the tone of the question. We know almost to the word what they're going to get asked. What are they going to get asked at half-time? Is it going to be more of the same? You know, what do you want from your team from the second half? What? More of the same, to be honest. Pep's half-time interviews, Charlie. Could be good. Could be good. He could be peak sarcasm at half-time.
But he's not going to do it if he's losing. Though I guess if he was winning, but they'd had like a man sent off, like.
But Pep would do it. So if they're 5-0 up against Burnley at half time, Pep, how are you feeling? Are you in dreamland? They'd be like, no, so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. These Burnley guys, wow.
Wow.
But the thing is, I mean, I guess the closest approximation we have now is manager wheeled out before the second leg of European tie. Mm. You know, you want away 3-0. What's the message tonight? Listen, we haven't achieved anything. It's a reset. We go
it's
out.
Half time.
We play. It's half time. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's probably the closest we have. And it's not a riveting sub-genre generally.
There was actually a really good example of this sort of where this sort of stuff will probably end up was Monday night, Nottingham Forest against West Brom. I was watching that and they did that little thing that they do sometimes before the match where they do little sort of flip back and forth between the two managers.
Oh, right.
They've interviewed them both. And they'll cut them all together. Steve Cooper was quite interesting and was talking about some injuries quite candidly and about atmosphere and about their great run of form, and he was sort of relatively engaging. Steve Bruce, however, was asked a really quite Brucey. Sort of open, vague question about, well, Steve, how are you set for this game against informed Nottingham Forest? And he just basically went, well, you know, it's a great game to be a part of. And that was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
That's a very Brucey thing to say. That's a very Brucey thing. I can't imagine a kind of revolutionary line of questioning. But the one thing that does tantalisingly hover into possibility, Charlie, is a manager being asked, what was the thinking there? Because I feel like you could do that at halftime because they were about to change, like make a triple substitution. What was the thinking there? You fucked it, didn't you? Yeah, you fucked it.
Yeah. But again, it's just the fact that if it's not a losing manager, that's going to take
That is spineless, isn't it?
Yeah.
It would just, come on, lads.
I think some managers might sort of happily break that rule, though, because I think it'll probably be up to them to say, do you know what? I don't mind. I'll do it. It's fine.
Something to get off my
chest. But then, what will they be asked? What? Sean, what was your message to the players at halftime?
I don't want to stand here and talk about referees. I'll only get in trouble. I don't want to talk about referees. So, I'll leave that one up to you to decide. But one to watch. I'm sure something for us to dig into next season, if it is indeed passed.
Yeah, great. It's great news for us.
Oh, it's fantastic great news. Yeah. Speaking of interviews, this is Nottingham Forest Jack Colback getting the absolute textbook did you mean it treatment after his goal against West Brom.
You two, a big win in every sense, but Jack, we've got to start with your extraordinary goal. You look like you couldn't believe it yourself, but were you definitely trying to score?
Yeah, 100%, yeah. Yeah. She's a pop number four, isn't it? And you know, went in, so. Nah, listen, I was going to say
to you before, I'm so annoyed I didn't. Nah, listen, we'll definitely be in there, 100%. Nah, listen.
Nah, not really. I just need the service a bit more.
It is the old one too, Charlie.
It has to be.
I have to ask about your goal. Did you mean it? Did you? And then it's that,
listen.
So that's the first bit. Listen. And then the second one is, did you practice this one a lot? I mean, did you do a lot in training or something? Nah.
Oh, that's so good.
It's absolutely on the money, Dave. There's nothing missing from that 30 Superb. Seconds or so.
And the whole conversation around it as well. I was, as I just said, I was watching the game live and it did genuinely make me sit up in my seat because it was like, no, oh my God, it's gone in. But then once that sort of instinctive kind of astonishment passes, I just thought, oh, here we go. You know, it's the whole commentator's good. Did he mean it? I think, look at his eye, look at his body language. That tells me he didn't really mean that. That was a cross all day long.
I think if you have to ask, the answer's no.
But it's like, it just doesn't matter. It's just it was just a pretty amazing thing that happened in the game. Once in a career moment for Jack Colback. And we get bogged down with this. Did he mean it? If he did mean it, it's goal of the season. But can it be goal of the season anyway? I don't know.
It's a very philosophical debate, this. But we were talking last week, Charlie, about trademark goals from certain areas of the pitch.
Yeah.
And when I first heard about this goal, I thought, oh, it's going to be one of those overhit crosses that have sailed over the goalkeeper's head in a lovely trajectory. But no, this is like it was almost sort of Roberto Carlos tribute act. So in the glorious genre that is goals I wasn't sure if people meant, that's right up there for me.
Yeah, I was thinking that in relation to us talking about that Masuaku goal from earlier in the season, weren't we? Which is a different... And there is a Roberto Carlos one just like it, you're right, that I saw last week being... And this is a classic. If that was Roberto Carlos, we'd be talking about this week. But there was one that I saw, and my first thought was, did he mean that? But then the way Carlos celebrates that one does look like he means it. And I do wonder if players could be a bit cuter about this. If they styled it out, maybe the shock is just too hard to hide. But
I don't know. I think there's something quite endearing, Dave, about the celebration, which to me is the absolute rubber stamp that he didn't mean it, sort of turning around, putting his hand over his mouth in kind of faux shock. I thought it was quite nice. I think it's fine to admit you didn't mean it. There's nothing to be gained from pretending.
No, this is one of the most amazing things about football, is that that particular passage of play will just probably never happen again. Like, the ball just happened to be bouncing at the right height, the right moment, when they were 2-0 up towards the end of the first half, and he just thought, I'm just going to drill this cross in.
It's sat up perfectly,
and he's over here. It's gone in the net. But like, it should be celebrated as an amazing moment, not sort of. We don't need to worry about whether he meant it or not.
It's a weird preoccupation, but I think it's kind of autopilot preoccupation, Charlie. We just feel like we must know. We have to ask. I've got to ask.
Literally
every single. I've got to ask. I love it. I love it. I love everything about it. Thank you to everybody involved. Finally, for the adjudication panel, this is from James Morgan, who, and I've been reluctant to get into this little subgenre of football coverage, by which I mean the pun-filled Quest highlights package voiceover, but I couldn't resist for this one. James Morgan has alerted me to 20 snooker puns in the space of 1 minute 26 seconds of the highlights between Sheffield United and Reading. He asks, is this a bit belittling of an important game of second tier football, or is it just the right amount of levity for a show on a channel called Quest?
On the eve of the World Snooker down the road at the Crucible, Sheffield United were hoping to stay in the playoff frame. But Lucas Joao, a former Wednesday man, was back in the Steel City to give Reading their big break on the green bays of Bramall Lane. The Royals rarely give their audience reason for rapturous applause in this theatre, losing on their previous three visits, but were fully deserving of their advantage and proving no easy yellows. Joao nearly in the pink again as the visitors aim to pocket all the points to leave those below needing snookers. But the Blades are in the cluster of promotion possibles and were determined to keep their long home unbeaten run going. Patience looked to have paid off as up popped sub Illiman and Dye right on cue in the 90th minute. Relief for the Whites, Reds and Blacks, and Dye stroking in with Ronnie O'Sullivan style precision. Paul Heckingbottom would balk at any suggestion that a draw was enough. He wanted to chalk up another maximum. Paul Ince's men feeling blue, but not for long. Going more or less straight up the other end from Michael Morrison's touch, Tom McIntyre with his first for 15 months. Reading through and through, he with teammates and travelling fans went loopy. The scenes of celebration fully understandable, with safety getting ever closer. United can't rest quite as easy.
17, I counted. I mean, I rejected a couple. I mean, bits like sort of stroking at home like Ronnie O'Sullivan. I'm not having that. That's a mere simile. But the pace of it, Dave, is relentless.
I think it was a decent, pretty good effort, actually. Pretty well done, pretty well executed. Didn't we have one when Robin Cowan was on? We had a similar situation where there was somebody, one of the reporters on Soccer Saturday had said they were going to, were going to do some puns, and they didn't really do it properly.
They did like two and it didn't land, did it?
Yeah, it didn't land.
Whereas there's
that that he's gone for it there, and a great deal of them kind of make sense. There were a few that didn't. Why was Lucas Joao back in the pink? What does that mean?
That like being tickled pink, which which is always used in a slightly meaningless way.
If Urban Dictionary comes up as the first result here, we're in real trouble. Now, in the pink means in extremely good health and spirits.
Right, okay.
Yeah, like tickled pink.
Yeah.
Very happy or amused.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. It's all good.
All right.
In the pink.
Fine.
I quite like bulk. Bulk was good because it worked. It was a nice even pun, Charlie. It worked on a literal level and on the pun level. So it was nicely poised, I thought.
Levels. Mm.
Between 17 and 20 snooker references in the space of 86 seconds. Well done, Quest. Well done, Quest. If we were going to embrace this subgenre, it would have to have been this one. Thanks for everyone involved.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Okay, now it's time for Keys and Grey Corner.
Ford Super Sunday.
Now, this week, it's hard to live up to last week's epic Keys and Grey Corner. This is more of a bite-sized one, Charlie, but still packs a punch. But it's more by the numbers, perhaps, it's fair to say. First up, the news that Sean Dyche had lost his job at Burnley. It was like a bat signal for Richard Keys, Dave. This is what he tweeted. Good luck to Dyche. Enjoy the rest, Sean. Somebody is going to get a top-class operator when he's ready. He should have got out of Burnley years ago. He gave them too much. Onwards and upwards, big man. Let them stew in their own mess now. pretty much contains everything, Dave.
Yeah, I think I saw it at the time and messaged you both over the weekend. It is just the absolute quintessential Keezy tweet. It's actually a work of art, really. In under 280 characters, he's managed to fit in so much there. So, first of all, good luck to Dyche. So, nickname.
Yep.
Ding, straight away. Enjoy the rest, Sean. So he's also calling him by his first name as well.
Screams intimacy.
Sort of,
yeah.
And sort of heralding a nice time away from the game.
My mate.
Somebody's going to get a top class operator when he's ready. Calling him an operator is just so classic of that world.
Because it implies he's good at his job, but he's also a great bloke.
Yeah,
just good at the stuff, good at the intangibles. He should have got out of Burnley years ago. It's just kind of this sort of bit of I told you so, bit of I knew long ago that this wasn't going to work or whatever. He gave them too much. Mm. Onwards and upwards, big man. the big man is a stamp of approval. Mm. Yeah. And then just this kind of withering, let them stew in their own mess now. Just rubbing his hands together with glee at what...
We'll have the last laugh.
What you wish for.
Dyche.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Self-inflicted doom is coming for you.
I mean, the big thing now as well, will we see Dyche on Be In? Will we see him on Keys and Grey? I mean, does he... On the podcast, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I can sort of see... If he were to be in the studio, I think the opening thing would very much be a bit of a change from Burnley, Dyche. A bit warmer. And him saying, like, can't you tell from my suntan? Or something like that.
Yeah.
And
then,
like, you know, lots of laughter at that.
I think he's more likely to pop up on the podcast. Mm. I can see him giving them an hour on Zoom.
Yeah, I can't see him going to Doha.
He doesn't strike me as a particularly... Because I think a lot of the appeal for the guys that go over on their show, and understandably, is getting to spend a bit of time in Doha or whatever. Mm. Yeah, in the hotels, on the golf course. It actually doesn't strike me as somebody... Because the pictures have already emerged of him... popping down to Rock City in Nottingham over the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, he'll be out and about doing weird stuff.
Hmm. He's more goals on Sunday anyway, isn't he? Let's face it. Goals on Sunday was made for him. Alas, no more. But yeah, no, it is the perfect cross-section of Keezy. But my favourite bit, Charlie, is onwards and upwards, big man. Because big man in Keezy's world is like an MBE, isn't it? Like, you don't dish those out cheaply. You have to earn a big man.
Yeah, getting the Dyche... and the Sean, and the big man. I mean, that is incredible. That triple whammy.
So if this scenario couldn't get more Keezy, Dyche's gone, onwards and upwards, big man. Burnley have a handful of games left to save their Premier League status. They're going to need to get someone in. I'll play the clip.
Burnley surely could only have made this decision if they were about to appoint somebody like Sam Allardyce. They've surely not made this decision saying, OK, well, we'll get a guy in, we'll go down, but we'll bring someone in who's going to radically change the club right now, is going to get us changing the way we play our football. They surely have brought Sam Allardyce or somebody like Sam in to do one thing, have a rattle at those seven games or eight games and see if you can get enough points to frighten Everton. That's surely what must be happening here.
If Sam walked through the door at Turf Moor, I think that would frighten Everton.
No, it wouldn't frighten me. I'd give the big man a ring and say, steady, son.
A big man, no question. I mean, of course, he's the ultimate big man, but yeah, from one big man
thanks,
to
big
another.
Man.
Yeah, great one, big man.
The thing is, with this, you know, that was we knew that was going to come as soon as we saw the news that this is Tash had been sacked.
They can't do it.
But that's the thing. This isn't just the Keys and Gray thing. It's this not just Keys and Gray being Keys and Gray, because every conversation I had with every football fan that I know over the weekend, inevitably the next question is, well, who comes in next? Mm. And every single one of them, to a man, either said Sam Allardyce or sent me a GIF of Sam Allardyce. And, like, are we not beyond that now?
We have to be.
But is Sam Allardyce... I feel like the West Brom situation has just... has cleaned it up. He's no longer Red Adair.
I think because he did an okay job at West Brom. He actually improved them. I don't think West Brom to him was what West Brom was to Pards, where that was him done. I think he's got one more in him, possibly. Mm. Maybe not quite Premier League. He might have to take a team up. But I don't think he's fully done. I also want to hear Keys and Gray's view on Jesse Marsh, given how things have turned out there, because he was another one they were highly sceptical of.
Yeah. Yeah, I think some grudging praise is going to be sent his way. Let's go full circle for this episode of Football Clichés. We talked about Brighton denting Spurs' top four hopes. Nice measured take from Charlie there at the start. Here's what Keezy's got to say.
I'm glad Spurs lost that. Unforgivably inept.
And that's it. Good to have a personal opinion from a broadcaster about why a team lost a game.
I'm all for that. Yeah. No pretense of being balanced. Just get stuck in.
I'm glad Spurs lost that. I want to hear presenters say that. It's great. Absolutely fine with me.
I think that is great. And just as a closing note, just one more thing to remark upon about the last week, right, that really, really annoyed me was the reaction to the fighting, if you want to call it that, at the end of Atletico Madrid v Man City, right, which, again, was a thing that I had so many messages from, like even from people that don't like football, happen to be watching, and they're like messaging me saying, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
Right. It was a spectacle. It was a great thing. But after the game, you just had them all going, we don't want to see that. This is disgraceful scenes. They should be ashamed of themselves. Fine to have that opinion. And you probably do have to say that.
Yeah.
But I just needed one of those people on the panel to go, yeah, but it was entertaining,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, that would have been fine. I think it would have added to the texture of it. I'm amazed it didn't happen. I don't remember watching the coverage after the game, but I'm amazed no one did that, because Charlie, I feel like the debate has moved on now. I feel like I hear more people saying, people say, well, this is stuff we don't want to see. Of course we want to see it. I swear more people are saying that than the original people are saying we don't want to see it.
Yeah, and as well with that, with what Dave's saying, there was a lot of the, like, look, you know, we love what Simeone's done at Atletico Madrid. Of course we do. You know, of course we love all of that. But this is too... I was like, no, it wasn't. It was... I mean, remember, Danny Baker had this... There was a one of his own goals. I think it was freak football. Exactly the same thing. And Barry Davis is saying about... I think it's
I'll
belt up Barry. I love... It's exactly the same. This is the side of English football. No one wants... Oh, belt up Barry. Which is exactly right.
And, oh, no. Yeah. Absolutely. Bang on. No question. It goes almost without saying. But yeah. Brilliant end to a brilliant episode. Thanks to you, David Walker.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Charlie Eccleshare.
Cheers, big man.
And we'll see everybody else soon. Bye.
The Athletic.